Good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. It's my pleasure to be with you on this Shabbat. We have James with us, although he's going to be operated on again next week and we'll miss next week. We've got Kirk, I think, who is fit as a fiddle, and we have Larry, who I don't think is quite up to par this evening. But hi, fellas.
Hello, good evening.
How's it going?
Good evening. The cast of characters here knows that my mindset has been, for the last 2 days, I've spent about 12 hours a day trying to translate one passage. I think it's now 25 pages of translation and commentary on a single passage. It is the seventh chapter of 1 Samuel, third statement. And it's been a most fascinating experience. I'm hoping to that we'll backtrack, Kirk and Larry, to it come Sunday and incorporate it into our discussion of why God hates government, which is the eighth chapter of Shamuel. But before we got there, I just figured, you know, probably should set the stage here rather than just jumping in as to why God hates government. And boy, that was a goldmine.
Indeed. Having just read it, it's remarkable.
Yeah, as it turns out, right after the Philistines had returned the Ark of the Covenant, we have Samuel speaking to the people. And the Philistines are still a powerhouse, even though nothing is known about the Philistines apart from what the Torah has to say about Torah and prophets. But as it turns out, Samuel, and the name means he listens to God, or I listen to God. It's actually first person. But that Samuel is tells them, here are the five conditions. If you meet these five conditions, you don't need to worry about an army. You don't need to worry about chariots or spears or swords or government or anything. Yeah, we'll just take care of it for you. But you need to do these five things. Is there anything else that you need to do there? Yeah, is there anything else you know about? Do you have to do five things to get a benefit?
Well, the covenant.
Yeah, the covenant. Five conditions for the covenant. Now, this particular deal, this is you do five things, and Yahweh will promises that he'll spare you from the aggressive assault of what Philistine represents. And we find that Philistine means those who are foreigners who invade and who seek to divide using terror. And the more that you study what God has to say about them, the more you realize that Philistine is just a pseudonym for aggressive, militaristic nations,
mm-hmm.
particularly nations that act belligerently, aggressively, viciously towards Israel, or that are into the business of apportioning what God gave Israel.
Well, I can think of a country that fits that description as a T.
You're kidding. Yeah, we all live in it.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we all live in it. He's talking about America. He's talking about Europe. He's talking about all the Islamic nations for sure.
Correct.
Even England. But he lays out these five conditions, and one of the conditions is very specific, and that is that you need to completely abandon and separate yourself from the Astarte. And the Astarte, we're dealing with the name of one specific goddess.
Mm-hmm.
But as it turns out, she is the specific goddess that's the unifying common denominator in virtually every religion, including, and she is most manifest in the world's most popular religion, Christianity.
Christianity. Absolutely. That's what Easter is all about. So
correct, sure. So in the book particularly of Yirmiyah, because I decided, well, I'm going to see what God has to say about a start. And to read everything I possibly can on her. And you know, the first thing you find out is she's called the Mother of God and the Queen of Heaven. And, you know, yeah, I was not going to buy into, not going to be the least bit accepting of this concept, Mother of God and Queen of Heaven. That's, of course, what she's called in Roman Catholicism. And she was, her symbol was the rose, which is why Roman Catholics have the rosary, you know, Hail Mary, full of grace. And in Yirmiyah, we shouldn't be surprised, but Yirmiyah actually calls her the Queen of Heaven and describes families participating in Easter together.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just...
How much you want to bet you can show this to a billion Christians and it will mean nothing to them at all. But no, please nothing. Continue.
What I thought was so revealing, as you pointed out, was that they are not practicing... rabbinical Judaism, it hasn't been invented for hundreds of years later, and so the whole attack is on the very thing that we do we observe every day in our life.
Right, because, you know, I've read a bunch of Christian sites on this, just trying to get a feel for how in the world they deal with particularly Jeremiah's criticism of the Queen of Heaven, recognizing that that's the common denominator in Christianity, and it's the
can I take a stab at it?
Sure.
Okay. Well, that's Old Testament.
Well, they actually say that is a false god takes our eye away from the real God, and that, you know, we ought not take our eye off our devotion to the Lord Jesus Christ. You know, that's the kind of rubbish they write.
In other words, she had to be born at all.
Oh, yeah, every reference to her has her worshipped along with, guess who? Baal. The Lord.
Baal. Yeah.
The Lord.
She was his consort, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so
condemning of Christianity. It's flabbergasting how openly condemning Yahweh was of Christianity and of America's culture with the you know, warlike, militaristic, we're going to prevail because we have the most stalwart defense.
Oh, well, you know, and you know, I've always said, and he gets into the Christmas trees and all that. Well, you know who these lost tribes are. You really do. He's talking to you right here.
Yeah. Right. As Kirk mentioned, one of the things I said as I was reading this is, you know, you would think that Christians would say that, you know, this is God rejecting Judaism. But at the time that he's writing, there was no Judaism.
That's right.
It didn't exist. And he is not discussing anything that was prevalent in the Jewish religion. His whole argument is against the Babylonian religion and the Egyptian religion and the Philistine religion and the Canaanite religion, which became the Roman Catholic religion and Christianity. And so, you know, this has nothing to do with Judaism. It has all to do with the universal theme that runs between all these religions, which is it's the virgin and child, the Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven, the Madonna. And you even see her symbols in America. You see her symbols in nature and political correctness. Wow, she is the
bumper.
Yeah, the ichthus. The ichthus was her sign. As a fact,
the what?
The ichthus, you know, that's the fish.
Oh, the fish,
you know,
yeah.
The fish, yeah. Where they call the ichthus Christians the fish. That was her sign. And the fish was her sign for two reasons. One is because she's a fertility goddess, but also because it was drawn in the shape of the women's genitalia. And the Christians that began to use it knew that it was a pagan sign. You know, the Pope's Dagon hat, even the concept of nuns, is translated fish, is why they're called nuns.
That I did not know. Yeah,
The whole thing is just despicable.
How do you defend that? You can't.
You can't. But Larry's right. You could show it to 1,000 Christians and not motivate one of them. However, you know, there's a lot of us that were Christians that started questioning our religion, mm-hmm. and were open-minded to anybody that explained why the religion made statements which were obviously untrue. And so there are those who I think will find
come around
the path to truth here.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's worth doing. But anyway, I think I've written 38 pages for this chapter, about the same amount for the chapter on Proverbs 6. I'm kind of going between the two just because it's doing one for the book for observations, trying to stay ahead of Kirk, so we've got good material for that show, because I know you translated all of 1 Samuel 8. So I went back into 7 just to get a preamble. I just love the context of things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's going to be an interesting review. You know, it'll be a 1,000-page book by the time I'm out of 8, based upon devoting 25 pages to a single verse.
I've never wrote a book that was
1,000
pages.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd be so disappointed.
Yeah,
but it's fun. You know, it's been an interesting experience. Anyway, I want to return because we'll cover more of that, and we'll do it within the context of Yahweh's statement. I want to return to the story of Noah. We had just considered the fact that the building instructions for the ark, the way that God gave those instructions, was all extraordinarily scientific. In terms of matching current naval architecture, it talked about even glue lamps so that it was physically possible for Noah to do what Yahweh was instructing, and how symbolically it communicated on so many different levels, including the three doorways, three destinations for human souls relative to this ark. So this brings us now to God saying, "Behold, I will bring a flood, a deluge of overwhelming proportions of water upon the regions to destroy all related animalistic humans and religious preachers, Bashar, in whom a spirit was born and lives from beneath the heavens, who are related in the region will expire." There are two, I think, important insights here, maybe three. The first, the method that God's going to use to cleanse the earth is a flood. Water is always the symbol of cleansing. So, you know, that's something worth affirming. The thing that we focused on last week was the fact that God's animosity towards these humans had nothing to do with their
their lack of relationship with him. It had everything to do with the fact they were just monsters to each other and the world.
Correct. Period. Correct. That was it.
Yeah.
And I think
he wasn't begging for people to listen to him or worship him or any of this nonsense.
He was upset. That they were killing one another, they were bludgeoning one another, and they just were killing animals for sport. They were turning the world that he created and the life he created into a cesspool of death. And they were so ruthless to one another that he said, "You know, God, I don't even want anything to do with them anymore." So it was our relationship with one another, kind of like, you know, today. You know, we use the drones, the bombers.
Yeah,
we just
we all seem to get upset for the same reasons, and we see it every day on TV.
Yeah, by the way, and he wasn't saying I want to do away with them because they're not tolerant. He didn't say I want to do away with them because, you know, they're not nurturing and giving. And most certainly said, you know, I want to do away with them because they're not religious. None of that.
They're not coaches.
They were all vicious to one another.
They were, in fact, religious. You might want to point that out.
Yeah, they were religious. They were. They were really religious. Yeah, that's absolutely. They were super religious.
And what does Nephilim mean? What does it mean? It means to prostrate oneself, doesn't it?
It does. Exactly. Religious.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it's interesting that when Yahweh speaks of the nations that have acted like the Philistines and have attempted to intervene and to forestall the gift that he has given to Israel and the land that he has given to Israel. He says that he's going to bring them all before him to judge them and that they'll be prostrate. They're going to prostrate to themselves. So he says that, you know, that if you're going to be judged, you're going to be bowing down. So there are examples where you're going to be bowed down in a prostration position in front of God. And so these the nations
well,
that are so aggressive.
It's clear that the only ones who are bowing down in judgment are all guilty.
That is correct. Oh, no. When it talks about his what he's going to do to those countries, it's not pleasant. And here what he has is that, behold, I'm going to bring a flood, water upon the region. It's not upon the whole world. There is a word in Hebrew, and we're going to consider it in a moment, for world. It's on the region, and this is a specific purpose. He wants to destroy animalistic humans and religious preachers. It's Bashar. The bodies of mankind who reveal their actual nature as preachers and as messengers. The verb bashar, you know, that as a noun, bashar is usually translated flesh. But in Hebrew, the one thing that you can take to the bank is that if you want the most accurate definition of a noun, it's almost always provided by its verbal root.
Mm-hmm.
Verbal root of bashar is to preach, to publish a message in association with the good news. Isn't the good news synonymous today with the Christian gospel?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, it's getting uglier, isn't it?
Yeah. So he wanted to get rid of animalistic humans and religious preachers. You know, and when you look at the amount of human sacrifice that was part of religion, and the Romans did it, the Spartans did it, the Carthaginians did it, the Aztec did it, the Mayans did it, the Incas did it, the Peloponnesians in Hawaii did it. It's even the native peoples in the Americas, North America did it.
You mentioned.
Yeah.
So you send your children off to war, that's the same form. You have no regard to
them. Today.
Yeah, as we do today, I think you have, yeah. You have no regard for human life. You're willing to sacrifice the lives of your children for political and religious agenda. Look at the suicide bombers in the Islamic world. That's animalistic humans that are torn to ribbons by religious preachers. And he says that, but it's not just religious preachers and animalistic humans. It's in whom a spirit was born and lives. Well, he's going to destroy this region and the flesh of preachers where a spirit lives. Oh, what in the world spirit do you think that might be?
Well, I'm guessing it's not the Ruach Kodesh.
Yeah, I'm guessing too.
Yeah. You know, this is one of those areas where an understanding of Hebrew is really almost essential. The distinction between spirit and soul in English is non-existent. Mm-hmm. But the difference between a ruach and a nefesh is night and day in Hebrew.
Night and day. Right. Yeah, this is not human souls. He says that them with whom a spirit lives. And Yahweh, when he said he created animals, he said he gave animals a soul, which is consciousness. That's the ability for animals, unlike plants, to be observant and to respond to their environment. That's what a nefesh soul or consciousness does.
Yeah,
and then he said
even about fish. He said
yeah,
it right there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Fish.
You know,
fish
I find it funny that every religion holds that the soul is immortal. Yeah, you always hear the term "your immortal soul." Well, if you look at the Hebrew word nefesh, look at any dictionary for nefesh, and one of its definitions is always listed as mortality.
Yes, and it's not only mortality;
it is mortal.
How long does your breath last?
As long as
you go one to another. We go one to another, and the last one, it's over, man.
Well, no, I mean, right here at the end of this verse, he says, "will expire."
Right.
That's pretty clear to me, you know.
Yeah. So, the fact is, a nephesh soul is mortal. Look at every animal and every person that's ever lived. The nephesh soul is mortal. This is not talking about a nephesh soul.
No.
This is talking about a ruach spirit. Now, spirits are immortal. But spirits can possess souls. And so...
apparently, and do. Yeah,
right.
Sure.
And since Yahweh never tells us that his malach possess individuals, they protect individuals, they serve Yahweh's interest, but we're never told that his malach possess souls, although his set-apart spirit can, in fact, envelop us in her light, in her garment of light, which is the Torah. This is not the Ruach Kodesh, because Yahweh says those who are enveloped in the Ruach Kodesh's light are his children. He's not.
Well, they're certainly not born from below, and they're certainly not disgusting to him.
Right.
These are the people he loves.
Right.
So we're talking about the opposite spirit here.
We are.
Little
these are the fallen. These are demons. So these individuals are demon-possessed.
Yep.
What do people think that conversation with Nicodemus was when Yahushua was talking about this?
Yeah. I mean, he said specifically that if you want to see, to experience eternal life, you have to be born of water and of the Spirit. And he said, you know, to Nicodemus, how in the hell don't you know this? Aren't you
By the way, this is a good thing to throw in at the Church of Christ, where I was a member, for a number of years. Of the water, instead of, we all know that we're born in the water straight out of the womb. They made that to, baptism is a must. Okay. Just throwing that in there for you.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing how people twist the obvious. Man, I don't know how many of you fellas have seen your wives at the end of the pregnancy and the delivery.
I delivered two of mine at home.
Yeah.
Two of them at home, okay? We were on TV for both of them. Yes, there is water.
Yeah, you come out of water. So you're born out of water, but this particular spirit is born and lives from beneath the heavens. The demons, they were demon-possessed, who are related in the region, and they're going to expire. The spirit's not going to expire. It's the animalistic humans and religious preachers are going to expire. So a lot of profound insights in that. It's important to understand the terminology God's using and the reasons that he's explaining that he's going to do various things. It helps us have a better appreciation of what he likes, what he doesn't like, the world as it actually exists. It gives you just a firm foundation and a proper perspective. Now, as it relates to the world versus the realm, this particular area, as I said, Tabel is the Hebrew word for world, as in the planet. Here's a statement. This one happens to be in Psalm 92. Because before the mountains were born on the earth, conceived on the earth, and the world, the planet, Tabel, was brought forth violently, even before time, you were infinitely powerful and always existed as God. So, this actually shatters a couple of myths. This notion that God was born, that God has a birthday, well, this says before the earth even existed, he existed. But it also says that it's it was the world that was brought forth violently. And boy, was that ever the case. You know, our planet was really brought forth violently. But anyway, it's Tabel. If he wanted to say the whole world was flooded, he would use Tabel. He would not have used Eretz. The next line here is one that I did not have a full appreciation for until we spent two programs on the rainbow as the sign of the covenant, and that we did a Shattering Myths program on how everything associated with Yahweh's instructions regarding building the ark to Noah mirror the terms and conditions of the covenant. And so it's not that, and this is what a lot of people say, you know, that there are dispensations and that Yahweh dealt with Adam differently than Noah, and Noah differently than with Abraham, and Abraham differently than with Moshe, and Moshe differently than now with Yahusha.
And oh, yeah, they even have what's called Noahide laws, as you know.
Yeah, right. So that from their perspective, the religious perspective, there are different dispensations, and that's the justification for the dispensation of the New Testament. But the fact is that the covenant that Yahweh is offering and establishing with Noah is identical to the covenant he established with Abraham. Same terms and conditions, same concepts, same benefit, same everything. And so this is not a different covenant. And in truth, Yahweh didn't deal with Adam any differently than he's dealing with Noah.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't deal with Noah any differently than he did with Abraham, nor Abraham any differently than he did with Moshe. It's always the same.
Okay, those just give them instructions. People choose to follow them or not,
right,
in most cases.
Right. Are you willing to walk away from your country, which all of these people did? I mean, Adam, of course, didn't have a country to walk away from, but he certainly figured out a way to walk away from God. So are you willing to trust and rely on Yahweh, walk away from religion and politics, be disassociated from those things, the prerequisite already was manifest in Adam's case, but everyone else had to separate themselves from country and politics and religion. Trust
yeah,
and rely
no, because
on,
Noah,
yeah.
I mean, he might not have been walking out of a per se legal country, but he was certainly doing what no one else in that country would do, which was building an ark for safety.
Well, he was the only one in that country that was right. Everybody,
yes,
he was right. He was the one that did not associate with everybody else.
That's right.
Now, where did Yahusha contradict any of this?
Never.
Never?
No. No, you don't see Yahusha telling you to submit to the government of Rome. That's Paul.
This is the law.
You don't see Yahusha saying, it's time for us to be religious. No. Yahusha didn't... in fact, Yahusha even separated himself from not only the religion, but also the politics of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's exactly the same. And he came to trust and rely on Yahweh, and he walked to Yahweh according to the path that Yahweh had provided. And he was an expert, the foremost expert, in properly observing the terms and conditions of the covenant. And he most certainly was circumcised. So I will establish my covenant with you. I will establish my covenant with you. By the way, it's Yahweh's covenant. It's singular. And it's the same covenant that he established with Abraham. Now, when Yahweh establishes, he says the same thing with Yishak. No one says, well, that must be a different covenant. When he says the same thing with Yaka, it must be a different covenant.
How do you figure?
But how do you figure? He says, I'm going to establish my covenant with you, okay? And then with Abraham, I'm going to establish my covenant with you. And then with Yishak, I'm going to establish my covenant with you. And then with Yaakov, I'm going to establish my covenant with you. Okay? He has a covenant, and he's inviting a lot of people, many people, not a lot by the billions who have come this way, is inviting thousands of people to participate in it. And all you have to do is look at the lives and the dialogue and the conversations with those that Yahweh invited to participate. I will establish Qum. I will stand up, enabling others to stand, confirming that which will elevate others, causing them to rise up and be restored. You know, Qum is an interesting word here. You know, normally he uses the term, I will cut my covenant. And cut means I'm going to separate. I'm going to create some separation. You're on one side or the other. And cut means to establish and you've got a business deal. But here it's actually Qum that he's using. And Qum means to stand, to take a stand. I want to take a stand with my covenant. I want to cause you to stand with my covenant. Speaking to Noah. All right, so we move to, and you shall be included and come into the ark, you and your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. All right, so the means to participate in this covenant was coming into the ark. And with the covenant with Abraham, we've got Yahweh providing the path to that leads to all of the benefits, and the path that leads to all the benefits begins with the Ark of the Covenant. You know, it's the blood of the Passover lamb that is sprinkled on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. We come, paid in Yahweh's family, via the Ark, and it's either the Ark symbolized by Noah, I'm going to save you and your family from the deluge, or it's the Ark of the Covenant, which is the mercy seat of the covenant that enables us to enter God's presence. Same thing. And it's no coincidence that both are arcs. And the fact that he's saving you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives just emphasizes that the Yahweh's covenant is his family. And so he's establishing this as a family covenant. You know, it was Adam and Chawa. And then it was Adam, Chawa, and their sons. And then it's Noah, his wife, and his sons' wives. And I'll look at Abraham. It was not just Abraham. It was Abraham and Sarah and Yishak and then Jacob. And their wives and their sons and after them. It's all about family. And this is the line that is repeated twice. And it is the summation of this whole story. And Noah, a name that means trustworthy guide to the resting place, did everything which God instructed him to do. He acted upon and engaged in everything which God instructed him to do. It does not say here, and Noah, being a naval architect, which is the reason God chose him, chose to interpret what God said and made some alterations just so that the resulting ark would be more comfortable, more acceptable for others.
You know, another way you could write this same thing would be to say, and Noah observed God's Torah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He acted upon the terms and conditions that Yahweh had laid out. He observed Yahweh's instructions. That's exactly. In fact, he said he observed Yahweh's Torah. Yes, he followed God's guidance. He followed God's directions on building the ark. So you could say it, yes. And Noah observed Yahweh's Torah, acting upon what God had instructed him to do. Torah and instruction, synonymous. And if you want the benefits, you've got to act, you've got to engage, you've got to accept what God is offering. What's God's position, Kirk, on the idea of adding to, let's just say that Noah said, you know, I think what I need here is to add some some down pillows and some comforters, and you know, I really like a teak deck on this sucker. And what if Noah had added a bunch of things to it? Yeah, and a flagpole. Well, that's what I wanted.
It would be totally violating because the whole thing is symbolic as well as real, but it's symbolic as a teaching instrument as well as reminding us that they don't change the jot and the tittle. Or the boat won't float.
Don't add anything to it.
Mm-hmm. That's
and also, what if he said, you know, I don't, this whole idea of the pitch, that's a lot of work, it's really dirty, it's messy, it stinks. I'm just going to forego the pitch. I'm going to subtract something from the instructions.
And then you sink.
That's right. But, you know, God would have known Noah's heart.
Yeah. He'd have kept the boat afloat no matter what.
That's why he's in the forgiving business, because he does know Noah's heart. He wants him to act. He wants him to react to things. And
Noah
decided
just not to bother building anything. Yeah. Yeah, he just didn't bother building it. He's like, God will save me. He knows my heart. You know, he'll lift me up and hold me across all this flooding water.
Yeah, and that's not what the story says, is it? It says that salvation wasn't a free gift. It wasn't the product of faith. It wasn't a negotiation. Nothing was added. Nothing was taken away. Nothing was changed. And Noah did.
Everything.
Everything. Which God instructed him to do. Yahweh provided us with instructions. If we act upon those instructions, then we will find the same result. Why is that so hard for people to understand?
They don't want to.
No. And isn't that the basis of the story?
Appealing. I don't know why it's not appealing, but it obviously is not appealing.
Well, because because they think that Torah means law, and they've been told there's 613 laws they have to go out there and enact. And That's what it is. They don't even know what Torah means. How could they even know what Torah means unless they...
Did Yah say here that and Noah followed all the Noahide laws and did all 613 things exactly as the rabbis would delineate them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of funny. The Jews and the Christians kind of balance each other out or put each other off in this way because you have the Jews who overcomplicate everything by turning it all into... you know, menial tasks to be done, and then you have the Christians who completely, you know...
No task.
Yeah, there's nothing to do. You know, I can't think of what the opposite of over...
Well, you have to tithe. I take that back.
Yeah, well, yeah, but, yeah, they got that part, but, yeah, they don't view it as in term complicated enough, you know, whatever the opposite of overcomplicate would be. You know, they want it to be just faith. And, you know, they think if you start talking Torah, you're talking following the Jewish 613 laws, and they don't want to have to deal with all that complication, so they just dismiss it. Yeah, you know, rather than actually look and observe and understand what Yahweh's Torah says, what his instructions are, you know,
right,
they just dismiss it all as faith. And then the Jews just try to take every little thing that God said and make some menial task to be done from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact is that there are no laws. Yahweh doesn't even have a word for obey. Torah means teaching and guidance. And so it's consistent with what was said here. And Noah did everything that God had instructed. It's all about instruction and us responding to the instruction. You either do that or you don't. I mean, those are really the choices. And, you know, there's no comment here that... And Noah was contrite, and he engaged and repented, and that he prayed that God would save him, and that he had faith in God. No reference here to faith, no reference to belief, no reference to repentance, no reference to prayer, no reference to any of the things that become the basis of Christian salvation. There's no membership.
It is the tradition everywhere. I mean, you look at all the stuff that's been, you know, propagandized into people's minds. I mean, for real. You watch a movie, and do you believe in God? Do you believe in God? What does that even mean? Do you believe in God?
I don't.
Who is your God? Who is your God? Why would you?
Yeah, it's not an Eric. What does that mean?
Right.
Let me ask you a question. And I looked up Ark. Correct. It's kind of interesting stuff. I know we just passed that sentence a minute ago, the one right before it. But if you like, let me tell you what I dug up and see what you think. On Noah's Ark, it's a bet and a hay, a ba'a. And the old definition means is a need and a box. It means an empty space needing to be filled. Now, when you think about it in relation to what those symbols are, you've got a family home and people engaged with Yah. So, obviously, and then I looked over it and found Ark of the Covenant. Right before I looked up Ark of the Covenant, I found A-R-H, Arsh, and that meant a gathering of items in a box. And then I looked up Ark of the Covenant, where I'm talking about where they translated Ark, but the word that is used there. And it's Aaron in Light and Free Will. And authority, and if you looked at the words, which is an Aleph, a Rosh, and a Wah, and a Nun, you've got authority gathering, observant people to enlarge the family with inheritance.
Right.
You don't miss the beat, does
it? You don't miss the beat, yeah, because the Ark of the Covenant is the important one. And the Ark of the Covenant, that Ark, is enlightened free will. And here the Ark is an empty box. The empty box is the empty box designed for the family members who are upright, who are standing up and reaching up to Yah.
Indeed, yeah.
And the only purpose of the Ark was to protect Yahweh's family.
Yeah, temporary home, yeah.
Temporary home. Yeah, it doesn't miss a beat. It's spectacular. Yahweh said to Noah, to the trustworthy guide, go into the Ark. Because what? The Ark was just nothing but an empty box. It is an empty box when the family's inside, is it? You and your household, your Be'eth, he's emphasizing what's the meaning of Be'eth, covenant, Be'eth, home, household. Because indeed, I have seen that those with you are right. They're tzedak. They're right by means of my presence in this home. And this generation, place.
They're right by means of my presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're right. And what are they right? Yeah, I was constantly telling us to walk away from our country, from governance, from politics, from relying on man's institutions. Well, they were right. They didn't. Yeah, I was constantly telling us that once you do that, that you ought to listen to him and act upon what he says, accept what he says, respond to him. They were right in that regard as well. And by the fact that they were right in these things is why Yahweh reached out and invited them into his house. That's why they were part of his household.
It's instructive to note here, and even though this is covering ground we've already been over, tzedak means right. It's the very word that righteous is based on. So, it is better to be right than to be nice.
Right.
Because I tell you what nice people do. They go out and they accept all the lies and smile and shake everybody's hands and go, it's okay, it's okay. Well, it's not okay. It's just not okay. To accept lies.
Yeah, it doesn't say here that Noah was considered charitable, does it?
Nope.
It doesn't say that Noah was considered rich and influential.
Nope.
No. Noah was really strong and an effective fighter. God wanted a fighter.
Nope.
It says Noah was right. You know, of all the things that you want to be as it pertains to Yahweh's instructions, is right. That's what Dode figured out. Be right. And the word tzedak, as you say, it's almost always translated righteous. Well, what is righteous? It's a celebration of right. It's just being right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does it also mean...
Yeah, of course, it's come to mean in religious circles that you're a humble, religious guy. That,
that's not what it means.
You know, you're almost a moron, you know.
Right.
I mean,
because, you know, with faith, there's no right and wrong on faith. But with Yahweh, there is right. There is wrong. The people outside the ark were wrong. Noah was right.
Yeah, it cost them their lives. Period.
And being right is what saved Noah and his family.
Right.
He was right by the means of my presence in this home, in this generation. From all the clean, domesticated animals, take for yourself 7 males and 7 females and 2 related animals, which are not clean, a male and female. And, you know, there's so many people who say, oh, see, that's a conflict. It's a contradiction. God said, you know, 2 of every animal, and here he's got, of all the clean animals, 7. And of the, and then 2 related animals, which are not clean. Is this a contradiction?
No, no, because we're the 7 represent the 7 Moed Mikra, period.
Oh, bingo. That's it. That's exactly right. So the 7 represent the Moed Mikra. You know what the clean, the 2 unclean animals represent of all these different species?
Food. Yeah,
food.
I guess so.
Food. 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 You know, the carnivores, including the humans, have to eat. That's food.
Yeah, they represent food.
By the way, unclean animals is food.
Yeah, sure.
Eat whatever you want, so long as you're thoughtful about it. Unclean animals for the food.
Yeah.
You know, you aren't what you eat.
You got to be right, and you got to be
right.
Clean.
That's right.
You aren't what you eat? I like that. Yeah, I really
yeah,
like
Yeah, you
that.
Aren't what you eat. And the reason for this was to, and this is Bereshit, Genesis 7:3, to keep alive the seed of light upon the whole land. So you have to have the unclean animals, and you have to have the 7 clean animals to keep the hope of life alive. And there's just, both of them are for the hope of life. The 7 clean animals, those are for the 7, as you said, Moed Mikra, Larry, and that keeps the hope of eternal life alive. That's the path to eternal life. But the unclean animals, that's the that keeps you alive from a mortal point of view so that you can respond and do the right thing as it relates to your immortality. It's all for life. God explains it right there. It's not hard to understand. Indeed, on the passage of 7 days, I will send rain down upon the region for 40 days and 40 nights and wash off and wipe out accordingly all of the living creatures which stand, whom relationally I made from upon the presence of the ground. Adama. Ground. Well,
40 is important, very important,
so is
because
seven.
That's completion.
Yes.
You know, and 40 yobel,
right.
Rather, are you know, that is completion, and it sure
in fact,
is.
If you use just the 2 clues that are in this one statement, you can figure out Yahweh's timeline. There's 7 Moed Mikra, there's 7 days, and 7 days in a week, 7 days to creation. And seven, so the 7 days to creation, 7 days in the week, 7 Moed Mikra. All right, so 7 and 7 days here. So there's going to be, if you look at human history presented in the creation story or presented in the week, you have the 6,000 years that transpire from the time that Adam and Chawa exit the garden to the time that Yahweh brings a remnant, his children, back into the garden. With the whole earth being transformed into the garden. That's 6,000 years. And then for 1,000 years, we're all going to rest and reflect on this.
That's Sukkah.
All right, Sukkah. So that's the 7 years of human, 7,000 years of human history up from the garden to the garden. And then 1,000 years in the garden. So
yes,
that's the timeline. And all you have to do to look at the, to understand the events within that timeline is understand 40. Particularly recognizing that in the very text that presents the 7 Moed Mikra, you have an explanation of the Yobel. And while the Moed and Mikre provide the benefits of the covenant, the Yobel represent the time that Yahweh returns us to the land, that's Sukkah. We come to camp out with him again. We return to Eden. The forgiveness of all debts and the freeing of slaves. We're freed by Yahweh. We are forgiven by Yahweh, and we return to the land based upon the Yobel. And so all you have to do here is look at, well, what's 40 Yobel? 2,000 years. So what happened 2,000 years from the time that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden?
Well, then, yeah, 2,000 years later, on Mount Moriah, mm-hmm. you had the covenant established with Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
40 Yobel after that, you had the fulfillment of the Moed Mikra by Yahusha in Jerusalem.
Yep.
And 40 Yobel from that time, you're going to have completion again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the return.
Yeah,
right there on Mount Moriah. Yeah.
The city named, the source from which reconciliation, the source from which teaching and guidance regarding reconciliation
Jerusalem,
flows,
yeah.
Is where Abraham established the covenant with Yahweh and affirmed it. It's the place where Yahusha enabled the benefits of the covenant, fulfilling the first four Moed Mikre. It's the place he's going to return.
Return, yeah.
Yeah, 40 Yobel. So now you have the important dates along the way on this this timeline, and then all you have to do is to say, all right, when was the covenant affirmed with Abraham? And you just do the math and looking at the timeline, and you realize it's 968 BCE, 967, 968 BCE. And then you look at the time that Yahusha was called into Jerusalem as the Passover lamb, 33 CE. That's exactly 40 Yobel. That's exactly 2,000 years. And
by the way, this flood is occurring at one of the high marks because he marks those, delineates that out in 20 Yobel cycles. So, you know, here we have the flood exactly 20 Yobel after Adam and Chawa are booted from the garden.
And the midpoint between the covenant being established on Mount Moriah and Yahusha fulfilling the Moed Mikre in 33 and 967 BCE.
Yeah, the temple built.
Dode lays the foundation for Yahweh's home on Mount Moriah. So you can play it all out. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know the exact day, the exact minute of the exact day.
Yeah, since he fulfills all the Mikra himself and says so, all the Mikra, rather.
So he's going to fulfill the Mikra of reconciliation. Because, man, he has a ton to say about reconciling his relationship with Yahudah and Yisrael. And he's going to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and with Yahudah upon his return, which is going to be on the Day of Reconciliations, Yom Kippurim, in 2033, which is year 6,000 Yah.
Yeah, just to...
22 p.m.
I just... exactly, sundown. Because he tells us it's sundown in two different places, actually.
Correct.
So we know exactly what minute it is. But
right.
Here,
and it's not going to be dark, because he's going to light up the entire universe.
Right, it'll look like a constellation coming at us. But here's the situation, though. And I just want to throw this out there. Have you ever noticed that these preachers that somehow they tangle with misinterpret Daniel typically, and they end up telling everybody to sell their homes and do this because they're about to get raptured up. Of course, raptured up is a Pauline idea. Teruah is similar to that, but it's Yahweh's idea. And of course, Teruah is the unknown day. That's the day that cannot be figured out. So it is almost laughable every time one of these preachers come out that have this big following of boobs that decide to sell their homes and you know, I guess go wild right. in the street or whatever the hell it is that they
you
do.
Sell your home, sell everything you got, and give all your money to the church, you know, so they can spread the word that this is coming and more people will be ready.
Yeah. But, you know, this,
oh, that's part of the, I'm sure that's part of the shtick.
Sell everything and give all your money to us so we can warn everyone.
Yeah.
Right.
And not a single
for
one
the unknown day. The day nobody can figure for sure.
Yeah. And every one of these idiots, they haven't bothered to look at the timeline that Yahweh revealed. It's right here.
They don't even know what a Yobel
is. After the passage of 7 days, then I will send rain down upon the region for 40 days and 40 nights.
And what else took 40 days and 40 nights? Wasn't it write the Torah, wasn't it?
Yeah, 40 days. Yeah. How many days that Moshe was out on Mount Horeb? 40 days.
40.
How many days was Yahusha tested?
40.
40.
And they were lost in the wilderness how many years?
40. How many years were they slaves in Egypt? 400.
40. Or no, 400.
400. 400. That's the number of years they were slaves.
But they were slaves to the Philistines for 40 years.
Yeah.
That's another one. There's another 40. Completion is 40. And, you know, and once you understand, you know, even when Yahusha walked into the temple, you know, as you aptly pointed out, what does he do? He goes right to Yasha Yahu and starts talking about the Yobel. That's
right.
Exactly what he did.
Right.
And so
well, you're witnessing the fulfillment of the Yobel in this reading. There he is.
Exactly. So now we got 40 more Yobel to go, and he's returning. That's the year 2033, and he will fulfill, you know, the Moed Mikra of reconciliation. So we see the exact moment that the family is reconciled. We see it right there in Zechariah. There can be no question about that. So, I don't know why people are stumbling around out here in the dark. I do know. They just don't even care about what Yahweh's words are. They factually, most people just don't care.
Yeah, they're willfully ignorant.
Right. Yeah, too curious, too interested in what some witness has to tell them. And they would prefer to believe that person to what Yahweh says because they're a special type of Jew.
Well, and it's
a special garment.
Yeah, not even that. But any of them. I mean, you talk about, you know, there's a whole lot of these, you know, faiths out there where they listen to some guy talk about visions.
Yeah.
I actually had somebody send me something the other day. I said, Larry, what do you think of this? It opened right up the guys in heaven with Jesus.
Oh, boy.
And I didn't go any further. I just wrote back, it's bullshit. They said, oh, thank you. I knew you'd know. I mean, there's just nowhere else to go beyond that, you know.
Yeah. I think vision is really important to understanding Yahweh's testimony.
Yeah.
But the kind of vision that's important.
Oh, yeah, you can't read without vision.
That's right. I'm a big fan of vision. And I have lots of vision. I was visioning all day today, all day yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the more I vision, the more I came to know. I sent you all my what I had visioned.
I know. I'm still reading this.
Yeah, vision's a good thing. Yeah, and it, you know, it's not in very good shape at this point. It's going to be, but it'll improve. But vision is an important thing. It provides insights into Yahweh's testimony, provides perspective. I'm a big fan of vision. It's how we observe. Now, this is an affirmation of this is the key part of the story. Don't miss it. Noah acted and engaged, doing everything which God instructed him to do. Bereshit in the beginning, 7:5. That's just it. You know, you want to be right with Yahweh? He has five conditions for participating in his covenant. Act upon them. Accept them. Don't change them. Don't debate them. Just come to know what they are, understand why he is asking those things, and respond.
Yeah, isn't that the main purpose of the Mikra?
Mm-hmm.
For the purposes of what? Understanding. Right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah, well,
he doesn't say for
the
purposes
invited.
Of a ritual or the purposes of worshiping me or the purposes of going into devout prayer or the purposes of punishing yourself. Matter of fact, he says just the opposite. He says never to do the work of the Moloch or the Moloch or the Malacha.
And, yeah, you know what's interesting, Larry, we're talking about Mikra here. You know, when Yahweh is having the conversation with the children of Israel who have decided that they're going to worship Astarte, the Queen of Heaven, during Easter. Then he says, as a result of that, there's an astonishing calamity. There's horrible things are going to happen to Israel. And he said that the people, Kara, it upon themselves. They invited it
upon themselves. Absolutely.
They called it upon themselves. They summoned it upon themselves.
Sure.
It's just, you know, Yahweh has Mikre, Kara, where we answer his invitation. He calls us out of the world, and we get to be welcomed by him and meet him. But he says that, no, man's worship of Astarte, Easter, the Queen of Heaven, that when we do that, we call and invite and meet with disaster. Called it upon himself. That's exactly the term that he used.
That's a pretty profound point there.
Yeah, it is.
And we do call disaster upon ourselves. That's right.
Yep. Yep.
You know, really bought every single Christian as soon as you said, you know, Noah engaged in doing everything consistent with basically Yahweh had instructed him. Because then you're working for your salvation, and salvation is a gift, damn it. You can't work for that.
No, it isn't. Now, can you earn your salvation? No.
No.
But are you saved by faith? No.
No.
You absolutely.
It's a relationship. Relationships require engaging.
Right.
Think of how a relationship with your wife would be if you didn't engage with her, you didn't discuss with her, you didn't talk with her, you didn't spend time with her, you did nothing. You'd have no relationship.
Correct.
Well, there's an old term, you know, being engaged, you know.
Yeah.
By the way, it does take it. Yeah, that's right. You know, an engagement is you engage. Now, by the way, this whole concept of acting, doing and acting, it's not that he's busy just being a busybody. He's doing and acting upon Yahweh's instructions. That's how we're saved.
If there was a giant flood coming. Mm-hmm. And Yahweh came to me and said, Larry, here's what you need to do to survive this flood. Buddy, I'd listen.
Yeah.
I'd take very detailed notes over every single step you told me to do.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. I'm going to listen. And if he says to do it this way, I'm not going to say, you know, I got a better idea. God's saying that I've come up with a plan that you can trust, that you can rely on. If you listen to what I have to say, you come to understand it, you accept it, and you act upon it, you'll be fine.
Well, by saying I wouldn't say, you know, I've got a better idea, you just described every religion there is.
Of course.
That's the easy way to do it. I've got a better idea.
Right.
And then you're right back into Babylon, you know, with Oprah Winfrey and who's the Mormon clown? What's his name? He's got the big following.
Oh, yeah. The talk show host.
Glenn Beck. Yeah. Glenn Beck. They ought to get together and go bowling because, you know, I've seen their way. It's the way of many paths. In other words, when they get out there and do their little public shtick, you know, they have the rabbi and then the female priest and then the lesbian preacher and, you know, and the whole group. I mean, it's a real clown show.
Oh, yeah. I went to the National Cathedral right after 9/11. You had all that stuff there. They're all lined up.
Yeah, that was just like back in Okra, you know.
It is true that the spokes on a wheel. You know, this idea that God is in the center and the spokes on the wheel all lead to him. The people that make that claim have never heard of this thing called centrifugal force.
I love that point. And you're
where they get thrown off, you mean?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Rather than everyone on those various spokes coming to God, they're all thrown away from him.
Farther away.
And Noah was a son of 600 repetitions, years. When the flood existed, and the waters came to be on the land, Now, do you think there was just a throwaway line? No, it was 600.
No. Oh, man.
Because there's another number here that's important. Number of man. Yeah. How many years does man get to play human games here on the earth before God just takes over
good
and says, okay,
point.
We're going to camp out
here? 6,000 years, exactly. Yeah.
Right?
That's
right.
A good point. Yeah.
Yep. So,
and that's before Yahweh does the saving. Not
right.
The IDF, no less. You know, it's Yahweh that does the saving. Yeah.
Noah and his sons, his wife, and his sons' wives went into the ark to escape from the presence of the flood, the overwhelming and inundating waters. You know, on the covenant, Yahweh created his covenant, established his covenant. We don't go into his covenant, it can't benefit us. You have to enter the covenant. Now, the covenant has a singular path that leads to it. You follow that path and you enter the covenant, or you're going to be out there in the flood. Same thing here. No one is family.
The ark represents what? It represents the Ruach, doesn't it?
Right.
The Ruach Kodesh, because we're going to be covered in the Ruach Kodesh or melt.
Correct. And the garment of light is the Torah. And it came to pass on the seventh day that the waters of the deluge came to exist upon the land. Now, it wasn't after the seventh day. It was on the seventh day. And so what do you have here? You've got Yahweh cleaning the despicable nature of man's religious and political self from the earth on the seventh day.
Which is exactly what he says he'll do in Zechariah upon the return.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is a setup for understanding human history. And Noah was 600 years. That's the time that man gets to screw up the earth, and then God's going to cleanse it. And so it was on the seventh day that Yahweh began the deluge that cleansed. And I'll bet you anything was right at the beginning of the seventh day, just as it will be in year 6,000 Yah, when he begins the celebration of the Shabbat and Sukkah.
Yeah, at the end of 6,000 Yah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
And at the very start of number 7. That's correct.
Right, yeah. And that's what this is, you know. The seventh day. So just as the seventh day, and the seventh day begins at sundown at the end of the sixth, the deluge. And it came to pass. So in repetition of 600s of years, so where he's emphasizing this again, you want to understand 6 plus 1, 6 days, 6,000 years of human history, and then you end up in the celebration of the Shabbat. This is 2,000 years to the time of Abraham and the covenant, 2,000 years to Yosha and the fulfillment of the covenant's promises, 2,000 years to Yahweh's return. That's the 2, 2, and 2. It's 6. That's the 6 days. The seventh day, Yahweh, and we celebrate a millennial Shabbat. So in repetition of 600s of years, Noah had lived. In the second month, in the seventh day of the month, in that day, a great magnitude and quantity of deep ocean water, Tehom, and all of the underground springs, the subterranean cisterns, burst and gushed forth, and the floodwaters of the skies were opened. 1, 2, and 3. Well, I tell you what, when I read that it was Tahom, and then looked up, did some research on Tahom, and the first thing you learn is that the word is based upon an Akkadian root, meaning deep sea water. And that what this conveys is that ocean water roaring up from the depths in overwhelming quantities and force created wave upon wave without intermission. And so Tahom is depicting a massive asteroid impact in the ocean. The only thing that would cause this. And what do we find? Dated right to this time.
The Burkle crater.
Exactly where it needs to be. to produce the welling up of deep ocean water, exactly where Yahweh directed it. You know, at that point, you just got to say, come on. Well, there is absolutely no chance that this is a fable, that this is a myth. And then you look at the physical results, and you look at these people that were living up through Mesopotamia along the Great River, right where Yahweh said they were, all the way to as the river then and the Tigris and Euphrates come to their source, and you find that this has them right around the area of the Black Sea. And then at exactly at this time, the Black Sea goes from being fresh water
to saline. Yeah, salt right. Water. Yeah.
And the Black Sea, all the civilizations that were around the Black Sea, which were part of the deluge, are 500 feet. No, they're still there. They're 500 feet below the Black Sea surface today.
No, I'm saying the civilizations.
Right.
You're talking
but
about what's left over from the civilizations.
That's right. Their ruins are exactly 500 feet below the surface. Now, do you think they built them 500 feet below the surface, or did something instantly change that raised the surface of the Black Sea 500 feet and at that very moment turned the Black Sea from fresh water to saline?
I think that was Atlantis. No, I couldn't help myself.
And, of course, what else happens there? The Bosphorus Straits becomes open, and you have now a tributary into the Mediterranean. And what else happens? We find 12 feet of silt all the way up the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. The evidence that this occurred exactly the way Yahweh describes it is overwhelming. Burkle Impact Crater right at that time. As a matter of fact, the reason they found the crater is that they found all sorts of sea critters and fossils up 500 feet or more all around the Straits of Hormuz and areas around that. And the only thing that could cause that is a giant tsunami, a 500-foot tsunami that would have been the result of an asteroid impact. And then they dated those layers. And then they found the crater itself. And they dated it to 5,000 years ago.
And when they find the crater, I mean, the crater is the hole. Do they not find any particles from the asteroid?
No, you typically wouldn't under those.
It would just blow up, or?
Well, yeah, the asteroid would blow up and
disintegrate.
But it's all of the energy is what created that enormous crater way below the ocean surface. And you know, when the guys found it, the Burkle team found it,
mm-hmm.
they recognized the timing of it, and their first comments were, "See, you don't need a miracle for the for Noah's flood. Here's the proof of what happened."
You don't need a miracle.
Yeah,
right. Yahweh generally uses physics, you know. I mean, they might want to consider
you're
that.
You're absolutely right, yeah.
But
knowing he was coming and preparing for it, there's a miracle.
That's pretty good. Oh, yes. Yeah, that's pretty good. But, yeah, this is God told us exactly how it happened with the welling up of seawater, and that's exactly what occurred. And, you know, the last thing on that list was the rain from the skies. And an asteroid impact of this size is going to create a worldwide flood event. It's going to throw so much debris up in the air. It's going to rain all over the world, just as this depicted. That would be the third stage of such an event.
Right.
I've read
articles where it said it would cause it to rain 2 weeks, and I beg to differ with them. It caused it to rain 40 days. That's what happened.
Yeah, that's the size of the impact of the Burkle crater. And the other part of it is it's going to create a brief nuclear winter, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be a lot colder. And so a lot of that rain is going to be snow on top of the mountains. And all it says is that they were covered. They'd have been absolutely white with snow. So here again, the rain continued to exist upon the land for 40 days and 40 nights. Six is being repeated. Seven is being repeated. 40 is being repeated. Those are the numbers you need to know if you want to understand Yahweh's plan and his timeline. And he gives it to you over and over and over again. Noah and his sons, Shem, which means name, Ham and Japheth, and Noah's wives and their three wives and sons with them entered the ark. And every animal according to its kind, and all domestic animals according to their kind, and every creature that moves about on the ground after their kind, and every winged creature and bird according to their kind, coming to Noah inside of the ark. A pair of two of each kind of creature in association with his spirit of life. So, the means that Yahweh used was the same thing that he's got right now protecting the Ark of the Covenant. He sent the Malach down and said to the Malach, you know, round them up, send them in. And so, it's the Ruach was responsible for getting them to come in, and he's talking again about the animals that were living in this area that's going to be flooded. So there were no kangaroos.
No wallabies.
My knowledge, no wallabies.
That's right.
And this is way past the time of Tyrannosaurus Rex and Brontosaurus. So it's just the kinds of animals that were living at that time, 5,000 years ago, in that particular place. And entering, by the way, the thing that is interesting here too, and it's something that that I don't have any proof of. I just like the idea; it resonates with me. I am convinced that in eternity, we're not just going to go on voyages of discoveries to stars and planets and nebulae and all that sort of thing, and to see a physical realm. I think the thing that God actually enjoys the most isn't the physical, but life. And so here in the ark, he's not just saving this family, he's also protecting life as he created it. And so I think in eternity, we're going to experience life. I think God's
going to... The flood was protecting life, which is the opposite of what the secular humanist will say.
Correct. He wasn't destroying life, he was protecting life.
That's right.
Exactly. Because God celebrates life. He enjoys life more than anything else. And to a large degree, the reason for the flood is that humans started killing for sport. And so to protect life from corrupt, militaristic, horrible humans, that's why the flood occurred.
Here's a point that I'd like to bring up or ask. It never mentions Noah's wife's name.
Yeah, it doesn't, does it?
It's odd to me.
Yeah. Yeah, or any of the wives' names.
Yeah, but specifically, you would think Noah's wife would be mentioned, but not at all.
No. My guess is that the one wife that ought to mean the most to us related to the covenant, and Yahweh just wanted one, is Sarah.
Sarah.
And what we do have here is we actually have the first wife's name is also listed here, because it says that that the spirit of life, this is Chaya, means life giver. And so Adam's wife's name appears here, and Sarah is the wife's name that is so important to us, because Sarah speaks of engaging and enduring with God. Her name is in the middle of Israel. You know, individuals who engage and endure with God. She represents the set apart spirit. Chaya represents the set apart spirit. Adam's wife. Sarah represents the set apart spirit. And so there we have their names, and they are prototypes for the set apart spirit. I don't think Noah's
the only thing I can think of here is
she's not being presented as the set apart spirit prototype.
Right. The only thing that and this might sound, I don't know, strange, but the only thing that I can see representing the set apart spirit here is the ark. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's why not the mention of the name.
Right. Yeah, in this case, the thing that's providing the continuance of life is the ark. And them.
Yeah, and it's also the covering over the family. And
right.
Right.
And it's so, you know, that is the reason that the name of Noah's wife is not necessary here. It's, it is necessary in the story of Adam and Chawa. It is necessary in the story of Abraham and Sarah. So that's
well, the wives of his children also, of Abraham's children and grandchildren, they all name their wives too. It's not like it's, they're all stricken out everywhere. It just happens to be here.
Right.
Because I guess.
They are, in many places, they are named and their names are important. The entering males and females from every creature came to and entered just as relationally he, God, had instructed. And Yahweh shut the door behind them. So you know what's interesting here? Yahweh has done three things related to the ark. He provided the instructions for it. He used his spiritual envoys to round up the animals to send them in. And it's Yahweh that shut the door.
See, I find that interesting because so many people are always debating whether Yahweh engages personally.
Well, we did.
Who shut the door?
Well, he engaged personally by giving Noah the instructions. He engaged personally designing the ark, designing the means, and giving Yahweh the Noah the instructions. And he had his malak lead the animals in, but then he shut the door. And I think
he
doesn't want Noah to put Noah in the position where Noah is making the decision that as all the people run to the ark and say, okay, I want in now.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want Noah being the one that says, no, you can't come in. Now, he established the instructions, and they didn't follow the instructions. They didn't listen to the instructions. They didn't ask upon the instructions. They're not welcome. The door is closed. And I think you ought to view this as the same thing as the door to Yahweh's home in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't listen to Yahweh's instructions and act upon them, the door is closed, and he has closed that door. And he ain't going to open it. I don't find it an open door here. It's not an open door policy. It's a closed door policy. So, when I'm closing the door,
It's significant, too, because Noah might have been such a nice guy. He might have left two or three of them in, and that's the same dead-gum thing happened with Abraham.
Right.
The little tent episode. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or Abraham saying, you know, what about Ishmael?
Yeah, what about Ishmael? You know?
No, absolutely not.
To me, you talk about the closed door issue. You know, so many people, you know, in life, people get used to talking themselves out of situations, or enough time goes by that whatever happened is forgotten and they're accepted back in. You know, this is kind of a one-shot deal, being Sadak.
It
you're
is.
Either right or you're
it
wrong.
Is. That's correct.
And there's a million wrong paths.
You're either in or you're out.
Million wrong paths. Yeah.
Right. You're either in or you're out. You're either part of the
company. It's a one-shot deal.
Right.
It's a one-shot deal.
It's important to understand that Yahweh does not have an open-door policy. The door to heaven is not open. He will open it for his family. He has opened it for his family. But he's going to close it. And if you don't listen to what he says and act upon what the terms and conditions that he has outlined, his instructions, it's closed. And there's nothing you can do. You can pound on it. You can yell and scream. You can say, I was a member of the church. I was a good person. It doesn't matter. He closed the door, period. And that's exactly the way that his home is.
I don't even know what a good person is. Do you? I mean, I'm not sure what that means.
Particularly since the people who are considered the best, like the Pope, are the most repulsive.
Yeah, and the people they attend church every Sunday, you know, they're good people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, wow. You know, I've even heard people say, and they had done nothing wrong. Well, you know, here, you know, and then the picture you see of them, there's a Christmas tree behind them. You sit there going, what do you mean you haven't done anything wrong?
Right.
You supported the very thing that's killing.
It was really interesting is going through the celebration of Easter and all the various Easter rites that the children, the fathers and the mothers were all participating together in the Easter rites. And then God said, here's the consequence. And you know how all these people said, well, but, you know, okay, so Easter, I understand that Easter is the day that Astarte, Ishtar was worshipped, and that every aspect of Easter is based on Ishtar. I understand it, but that's not what it means to me.
No.
You know, yeah. When Yahweh is delineating what they did, and he said, here's the consequence, and it's, you know, you're over. I mean, you're going to get pummeled by your enemies. I'm going to have nothing to do with you. We have no relationship whatsoever, and I'm forsaking you. God didn't say, you know, but I know that that's not what it meant to them. This is what they did. This is what Christians do when they celebrate Easter and Christmas. And as such, I got nothing to do with you. Goodbye. Door's closed. It's the way it should be.
Yeah, and that closed door, I mean, that is a profound thought, because throughout your entire life, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, you make a mistake at work, you do whatever you do, and then you stand in front of somebody and you assure them it won't happen again, or, you know, I mean, this is how people get out of things in their life, if you will. Or you correct the problem. The problem with that is there comes a time when you can't correct it.
No.
You know, like the people standing in front of Yahweh telling
that's
him.
That's where I thought you were going earlier when you said, you know, there's a time you need to act. There's a time you need to act.
And
Yahweh was giving the instructions to Noah to build the ark and his family responded, that was the time to act. Once the flood has come, it's too dang gun late. That's just like the tribulation. If you get involved in the tribulation and you take on the mark of the beast showing your allegiance to him, it's over. You know, I was watching something the other day that this article came out, and it showed that this kid in some school substituted ISIS for in the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, I pledge of allegiance to the United States of America. He pledged allegiance to ISIS. And you have this picture of all these kids with their hands over their heart. What are we doing to our children? Telling them to pledge allegiance to America.
And he says, don't pledge
allegiance. God, it's despicable.
Well, somebody should have grabbed the kid and said, you idiot, don't you understand America funds ISIS?
One for America, there wouldn't be an ISIS.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
No, really, one's just as bad as the other.
Of course.
Well, we've been able to...
But having our children still do a pledge of allegiance... When Proverbs 6, do not pledge allegiance.
Yeah,
don't do that. Yeah, Proverbs 6, don't do that. So the flood existed 40 days on the land. And the waters increased and lifted up the ark high above the ground. And the waters prevailed.
Now that's kind of a point, too. Lift it up.
Yeah, lift it up.
Yeah.
And how many days?
And by water, that's synonymous with the Ruach Kodesh, too.
So how many times is Yahweh repeated? 6, 7, 40. And 40.
Yeah.
Several so far.
Yeah, so if you're...
Probably about 7 times.
You think that God has a short-term memory issue?
Nobody knows.
I don't think he has a long-term memory issue. I don't think he has a memory issue.
I don't think so.
But apparently the people he describes as Christians, and Matanyahu sure does, because he describes Christians standing there, and this is the hubris of religion. That's what blows me away most about that passage. They're debating the creator of the universe that he helped them do all these miracles and do all these things.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, I never knew you. I never knew you. Which that throws out the idea of being omnipresent, too, or knowing everything, either.
Lord.
Yeah, he says, Yeah, I never knew you. Get away from me. In other words, the door is closed. Get away from me, all you who are Torahless.
Yeah, he would certainly have to have a memory issue if he spent 24 hours a day with them 7 days a week and never knew them. I don't think he's having an Alzheimer's moment there.
He's repeating all of this because he's
instructed
for a report. Everything here is important. It's all, every detail of this. And the closer you look, the more you learn. The more you learn, the more you know. The more you know, the more you understand. The more you understand, you're empowered to make an enlightened and rational decision. And to accept what you've come to understand and act upon it. The whole process here. This is one of many stories that helps us understand so that we can do the same thing that Noah did. Act upon Yahweh's instructions. Powerful story. Well, fellas, I'm really pleased that my internet and lights stayed on here in the... with
you got about five more minutes before they go out on you.
There we go.
Now that the show's over, it's going to hit.
They say there's zero chance that we'll have power or internet by midnight tonight. The winds are supposed to come up to 50 miles an hour, and there's snow on everything.
Really? Zero?
Are all your animals safe?
Zero.
Put it over in your family?
Yeah, we are. This will be the biggest snowstorm that we have ever experienced in Central Virginia.
Wow.
Yeah, by morning time, there we're expecting 2 feet of snow.
You're in Central Virginia tonight.
Okay. I am, yeah.
That sounds nice compared to, like, the 12 inches of rain we've got here.
Do you have a fireplace going? Rain?
I did all day today as I was writing. I really had a great time down here today.
You can tell in your writing you're having a good time.
Yeah, I really
have the time to do the writing.
You can hear it in your voice that you're enjoying yourself much more since you've left Shattering Mists.
Yeah, you know, what I did is, and Jackie is probably listening, which you can't listen now because we're recorded, but we're not broadcasting. But Jackie, who did all the edits, I came up with a way to put every chapter of every book, which all has, you know, I've got probably, 1,000 hours of Jackie edits to put in. I just put them up into a lockbox that she has access to, and that's going to be the basis now of the, because I was in too many computers in too many places. So rather than having to try to keep all my files straight, I edit everything out of the lockbox. She has access to it so she can make the edits, and it's given me the opportunity now to just translate and make the connections and then write about it, and it is so much fun. Yeah, I just had a ball today, yesterday.
It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
She's one organized human being.
Yeah,
Sunday, 12 o'clock, my time, California time. So you think you're going to be able to do that program?
I hope so. We'll find out. You know, hope so.
Keep us posted if you can.
One way or another. Yeah, you'll know. If I don't respond, you'll know.
I did not realize last week we were doing this show. And I just, I turned on my FB about 8 o'clock at night, and I saw that... I'd gotten an IM, and it said, call in to the show anytime.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, we'll be 3 o'clock East Coast Pacific. Yeah. So we're scheduled for 3 o'clock on Sunday with Scott.
3 o'clock Eastern.
3 o'clock Eastern.
Okay.
3 o'clock Eastern, first day of the week, Sunday, is when we're doing the recording.
It's 3 o'clock.
You know, we get some pretty high winds down here in Jackson.
12-year time, 3 o'clock Eastern time, 2 o'clock Scott's time. And what I wanted to do is, and I will, if I have internet, I will send you an update on this chapter, which is now really a whole chapter just on Shamuel 7-3.
Okay, now is that what we're going to do on the show? That's the one we're doing, right?
Yep. Yeah, we spent the last one talking about eight. I think we did 8, 6, 7, and 8, that kind of things on the last one. And rather than just continuing, I just wanted to backtrack because this really sets the foundation for it, and then we'll carry on. Because I think understanding why God hates government is and why he wants us to leave religion, I think it's essential for...
Yeah, and it's yet another reason to really question how anybody would name their kid Sheol.
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, really.
Right.
Paul's, Sheol's parents must have been complete asses. I mean that.
Right.
How would you name your kid after the very government
right.
guy that hated
right.
Dode, wanted him dead
right.
and everything else?
Right. Why would you do that?
Yeah, and today, why would you see all the religious types stick up for the name? It's
right.
it's astounding. I mean, even Jewish rabbi types and all that, rabbinic.
Oh, there are so many. You know, the thing that I was just, as I finished this translation, and it's talking about the Queen of Heaven and the doctrines and the celebration of Easter and the religion that she fostered.
Right.
You know, the uh-huh. references to it is lowly and little. Yes, yeah, so, yeah, the consequence of this and the message that they profess and summoned upon themselves is lowly and little.
Yeah, and for those of you that don't know, that's what Paul's name means.
That's
what
Paul's
name means.
Yeah, lowly and little. Yep.
Oh. Again, he shows up all over the place, and it's always in bad places.
Always in bad places.
100%
always.
Of the time. It's lowly and little.
Plague of death and lowly and little. And what it was being contrasted to is that Yahweh is offering to make us magnificent. He is offering to enlighten us with power.
That's right.
And to raise us.
Lowly and little.
But
being
that's the comparison. Is lowly and little is important because it's the antithesis of what Yahweh is offering.
It is so, so obvious. I mean,
let me tell you, Happy Shabbat, just in case we get cut off the air here in about a minute.
All right. Well, I'm glad you liked it, Kirk. And
I did. I read it out, and Terry and I sat there, and I read it, and we talked about it, and it was pretty cool.
I've enjoyed what I've read. I've enjoyed
it
too, Craig, okay?
It's exciting. I'm just mentioning it because I'm not soliciting feedback here. It's just that, you know, when you get that engaged in something and you really find it interesting and enlightening and you're learning stuff, and, you know, it's just it's more fun when you realize that, yeah, you're not the only person that's interested in this detail. That it kind of
well, let me tell you something. Just getting to lowly and little would have been enough.
It's full of stuff.
It's back at it again. This horror is
some great observations, as we like to say now.
Yeah, great observations. It's fun. Back at it.
All right, gentlemen, I will see you all Sunday. Stay warm as best you can.
Stay safe. Craig.
Yeah, boy, it's going to be tight. Yep. Should have 2 feet of snow by morning.
Wow.
That's
are
pretty exciting.
Down there,
you have to work.
Are you flooding down there?
Believe it or not, a couple nights ago it hit 32, and tonight it's supposed to go down in the 30s. He was talking about all the wind. You know, I'm sitting here listening to it whistle out there. I mean, there's a lot of wind down here.
Yeah, I actually think
not.
Climate change is real. I mean, global warming's not. At least man-made.
Yeah, man-made is.
Yeah. But climate change is not only real. It's exactly what God predicted.
Yeah, that was bad stuff coming down.
Yep. All right, fellas. Good night. Enjoy doing it with
good
you.
Good evening.
All right. Happy Shabbat.
Enjoy your weekend.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.